So we'll continue where we left off from yesterday. So basically, when we're trying to understand what is the proper match, then there's many things that we must look at. So the one essential point is that we have to understand that there's a culture to doing this. In other words, if this is understood in a cultured way, we can understand that a marriage will also be cultured. And if this is not done in a very tasteful way, we can also understand that the marriage will not have a whole lot of merit either. So we have a few different situations. One is that we have our family members or different relatives to make such arrangements. Another is that we have some authorities, the temple authorities, or someone who is going to take care of these things. Or we may have to ourselves also be partially involved. But it's very important that everybody understands where they belong. The nature of the living entity in the material world is independence. That the living entity naturally wants to do things themselves because they have a lot of faith in themselves. Tendency is not to trust others. So we always think, I know better, I can do better. But we have to understand if that was true, if that was the case, then in all those cultures where each individual themselves arranges the marriage, we would expect to see a large amount of quality marriages. But as far as I know, in the latest statistics that I heard, I think it's 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 marriages in the first world, they fail. So it doesn't look like it is necessarily the greatest system. While we see in cultures where the marriage is arranged by someone, or by those who know how to do such things, then we see that there is a higher level of success. Because in the aspect that is attractive in while making one's own arrangements is the sensitivity that one has to have to create communication. See, we have to understand that in here we're dealing with a mix of cultures, so I have to say something that both cultures understand. So that means I have to use the subtleties to not disturb the subtler culture, but it has to make the point that those from the grosser culture catch it. But unfortunately, because it's in the middle, he doesn't catch it. So there's a little problem here. The ways of the Malechas and Yavanas, you are not understanding. So some of the subtleties of that culture, you won't understand. And they don't understand the subtleties of the Vedic culture. So then we sit in the middle. See, we're talking about relationship as an experience, it's rasa. So activities of the rasa are mediums through which we taste rasa. This like mentions, Rupa Goswami says, dadati pratigrinati guhyamakati prichati bhunkte bojayate chaiva. Means those are mediums through which you exchange affection. Means it's not the food you give or the gift you give or what you're talking that is the rasa. Means it is something through which two living entities can exchange. So in the spiritual world, this is called lila. Right? The Lord doesn't have to work, doesn't require anything, but he does all these things just so he can exchange feelings with his devotees. So in the spiritual world, the emphasis is on the rasa. And the medium through which it is, that is just part of that rasa. It's a perfect blend, a perfect mix. But in the material world, the living entity thinks the thing is the cause of happiness and the cause of rasa. So in the old cultures, then we see that exchange of rasa is based on very simple things. Like Rupa Goswami said, it's sitting together, a little talk, eating a little something, give a little gift. But it's all very simple, and the emphasis is on the exchange. And we see that everything's very pleasant, very nice, very happy. What you're eating is not so important. What the particular conversation is about is not important. Or even the gift that's given is not important. It's just a medium through which you have some way to communicate. This is the aspect of but we see in the modern cultures, the emphasis is put on the thing, and the rasa, no taste is there. So the emphasis is on what you gave, what was there to eat, what was in the conversation, and because the conversation itself was exciting, then you like, or because what you ate was really good, you like, or the gift was really what you wanted, you like. So because of that, then they get less and less taste out of the relationship, and the relationships don't last. So it's based either on the exchanges between the body or between the extensions. We see that Krishna is not worried what you're giving, it's the devotion in which it's given. So for him, the rasa is more important than the item. So in the same way, as we find ourselves, as we become purified, then we appreciate more the exchange between the devotees rather than just the situation. So, therefore, when we're dealing with the subtleties of relating with the other person, that gives more taste than dealing with the things. So this is the reason that relationships can last or not, is whether they're based on that sensitivity between individuals, or it is based on externals. So this means that, okay, we accept the fact of being sensitive, but now we can decide whether that sensitivity is out of, for duty, for devotional activities, or sentiment. And whether in its sensitivity, also in the sensitivity, is it for our own benefit, or is it, personal benefit, like let's say sensual benefit, we get some money, we get some facilities, we get some position, or is it good for our spiritual development? So the culture, following the culture itself nicely, still is not enough. It is just that the Vedic culture is a better medium through which the devotees can exchange rasa than, let's say, the Western. But more important than good exchange is that it's based on the spiritual platform. Okay, so with that understanding now, we'll go back to where we were before when we stumped the translator. So now, if two individuals come together, they don't really know each other, they're very, very sensitive how they move, how they do everything, that they don't do the wrong thing, otherwise relationship will be broken. Right? Means I'm not thinking what I'm going to do, I'm thinking what is the other person going to do? Do they want to sit? Are they going this way? Are they turning left? Are they doing this? They're doing very sensitive to everything. So now this sensitivity then creates a very great intensity of rasa. So then we get a strong taste out of this. And therefore we think everything's going to be very nice. I haven't gotten this strong a taste out of anything else. So, and this is nice, and I'm always wanting to be happy. So naturally, this relationship will be very good. So without more consideration, we think this is fine, and then marriage is there. And then we mentioned then, after some time, you know, short time, a few months, then the realization comes that this is a person, I don't even really know who they are, what their values are, what their interests are, anything. And then it comes down to a matter of, well, I want to do like that, and they want to do like that. All sensitivities out the window. Then the relationship falls apart. And then naturally it's the other person's fault, right? I'm perfect anyway, you know. Everybody knows that, you know. So it must be their fault, right? So I'll be a little more careful next time. So like this, following this path of neti, 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 you know, not this one, not that one, not this one. So then sometimes after 2, 3, 4, 5 marriages, then you kind of get it right. Maybe. Of course, it's a detail, you know, it's a less important point that we just happen to be 60 years old and it's our third marriage or fifth marriage, you know. And, you know, the Shastras recommend that half the life is spent in these things, means up to middle of the life, and the end, the second half should be spent just getting into spiritual things. But, you know, first things first, this is more important, right? So like this, a lot of time is wasted. So the point is that one has to, as I mentioned, it has to be understood what are the values, what are the methods, what are the desires of each party. Then it's clear whether this is correct or not. So the point is that if one gets to know this, if it's not the correct, then that should be left. The problem is that we generally get attached and we don't go through the method, so then we consider it'll be okay anyway, because, you know, hormones are moving, adrenaline is flowing, you know, the flowers are there, the breezes are blowing, the moon is so nice, you know, it's all Maya's expert. But instead of being, you know, you come back later, yes, the same breezes are blowing, the same moon is there, but now it just is a great opportunity to have a big fight, you know. It's a peaceful night, so we can yell at each other very nicely. No disturbance, no one called on the phone, no guests. So this means there's a certain few, okay, yeah. So we must understand that we have to discriminate between these kinds of sensitivity. So that sensitivity, if it's simply based on the senses, that will go. Just like a flower, it's so nice, but it fades. The smell goes, the color goes, its shape goes, everything goes. So that's not a good platform of sensitivity. So that platform has to be sensitive to know who is this person that you're going to be working with, and know how to establish it on a spiritual platform. Then we actually get a better result. So then this means if it's done like this, then one remains sensitive to the other person's interests, needs. This is the meaning of the boy is trained in brahmacharya and how to be sensitive to the needs of the family members. And the girl is trained in chastity and how to be satisfied with whatever the father, the husband, or the son can provide. That is the sensitive. That makes things last. Otherwise, husband can bring something and they're like, what's this? You know, why? They have a bigger house, they have this, that. Why can't you do all this? Why are they all doing like this? That's it. Finish. Marriage is over. You know, or the husband just thinks, yes, such a nice arrangement. I come home in the evening, I sit, I read my Bhagavatam. The wife makes, you know, some nice prasadam and, you know, takes care of everything else and, you know, pat the kid on the head and say a few things about what I did and, you know, take rest and, you know, that's it, you know. Then, yeah. Then the problem comes is he's not sensitive. The wife has things that are going on. She wants to speak, say so many different things. It's not she's just servant there in the house. So then, in this way, then, between the both of them, it breaks down. Wife is expecting to have all the facilities of all the neighbors, and the husband is just thinking it's going to be some ideal, wonderful thing. You know, I was in the brahmacharya ashram. You know, I couldn't study because the temple commander tells me this, that. You know, Prashad's not just the way I want it. You know, I got to fight over, you know, I want to sleep in this corner, but somebody else wants to sleep there. So I get my own place. My own place, and I sleep where I like, I eat what I like, when I like. So it's a perfect arrangement. But one forgets that there is another person involved. So if one looks at it simply from one's own vantage point, what they want, you know, the wife wants the facilities, the security, the husband is thinking of the, you know, the independence, and also the, you know, what he'll get, then this is not actually, this is not grihastha, this is grihamedi. Because that means the central feature of why we get married is for something material. But the grihastha means the purpose of getting married is to advance in spiritual life. And by performing our duties properly according to Krishna's directions. So by performing our duties properly according to Krishna's direction, then we understand all the facility, all the security, all the things that we thought were wonderful aren't actually wonderful. They don't give us any satisfaction, and this is not, you know, actually very important in life. Then, with full conviction, one knows the material world can give me no protection and no satisfaction, and I can only get that at the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says that only a first-class brahmachari, he can actually perfect Krishna, I mean, grihastha life. Because he has knowledge. He's not going into it thinking it's going to be some wonderful ecstatic experience. Romanchakar means hairs stand on end. Yes. Sometimes they do stand on end. Yeah, it's called horror, ghastliness. You know, like that, yeah. So and those, the second class, third class, they don't have a good experience. They're the ones that are going again and again through. They're the ones that aren't learning anything even though they've been through it, because they think that the marriage itself has some substance that they're going to get some satisfaction from. But the one who is properly trained in the Vedic culture understands that there is no substance there, but the mind thinks there's substance there. But unless you go there and show the mind, see, here, you thought there would be so much security with this. We have money now. Now, see, we're still not happy. Now we have a big house. You happy? No. We have so many kids. You happy? No. All these things, you know, you thought your body would give you so much nice satisfaction. Now look at all the wrinkles, you know. Like that. You can't digest anything. You can't do anything. Then the mind goes, okay, and gives up. So that's why we have to go into it also with regulation. Because by regulation, then you're able to see things as they are. If one doesn't follow the regulations, then one can be bewildered by the external and think that is giving some taste. And then when we lose that taste, we think it's the other person. Prabhupada mentions that in the, you know, materialistic marriage, they stay together as long as there is, you know, good sensual power is there, good sensual enjoyment is there, they stay together. As soon as that wanes, then the marriage falls apart. So then, in the considerations that one must see that there is compatibility on, there's many factors. But we have one factor is what came up yesterday. Will there be children or there'll be no children? It's no use that one wants, the other doesn't. I've heard many marriages like that. Husband, wife wants, wife doesn't, or wife wants, husband doesn't. Big anxiety. It goes on for years and years and years, and eventually either one of them changes their mind or the whole thing just falls apart. Or if they decide, yes, be children, then how many? One is thinking, you know, one, two, the other is thinking, you know, 10, 12. You know, that's not good either. Then another element that's very important is the training of the child. One is thinking they're going to be a Harvard, you know, nuclear physicist, Nobel Prize laureate, and the other is thinking that they're going to be a, dynamic world, acharya and preacher. And so that is also a slight problem. Or whatever it is, do we send them to school or we'll teach them in the house? Or then we have the culture of the family, which also includes the children. Are we, liberal and we move with the modern trends? We have no hang-ups, we're not fanatics. We're not worried about, little things like, Western dress or culture and all this. That's for the fanatics. Or, we're very conservative. We want to follow what Prabhupada says like this, do it in this way. And, we look for that, and we expect that from our children. So this is important. We may think it just affects us, but no, it will affect our whole family. Because the natural thing is we want the best for our children. So whatever values we think are best, that's what we're going to try to raise our children. So maybe two individuals can live together and have kind of different values or different lifestyles and have no problem. But then the problem comes with the children, because now both are attached to the children, so both want their style of living for the children. So that culture, that aspect cannot be underestimated. Then you have, your one's facilities. Someone is satisfied with, whatever simple thing the temple may provide, this, that. Someone else wants more facility, needs more facility. Or where one is doing service. No use that one wants to be in America and the other one wants to be in China. Another aspect is seriousness in Krishna consciousness. How serious one wants to be. If one wants to be very strict, follow all the temple programs and all this, and the other one, why so much, give a little space. So these things, though they're very, very simple, generally, if you check with marriages that work nicely, there's a commonality in these things. The marriages that don't work nicely, it generally comes down to one of these things. So it's simple things. It says the straw that broke the camel's back. It doesn't say the Mack truck that broke the camel's back. It means you have a camel, and then you put one straw too many, and then the camel collapses. You understand? So it's little things that drive you nuts. So these are things to be clear. So that means relatives must know and discuss these things, temple authorities must know or discuss these things, or we have to know and discuss these things. These things have to be discussed. Just relying upon the senses and, the pleasantries like that is not enough. Because otherwise, the senses are imperfect. So we have to be very, very careful that these are things that must be discussed and understood. Because if they're not, then you're going to find that morning comes and we go, who is this that I married? So one should know all this before the marriage. Then that morning doesn't come. Right? Also, we have to maintain that commonality of spiritual, that the bond is from the spiritual platform. This does not mean that the attachment is spiritual. It means that the reason for staying together is spiritual. It means staying together for service to Krishna. Okay. So are there any questions on all this?
Did Charlotte have another question also? Seems more that the spiritual reason for staying together will overcome other discompatibilities. Can we pray soon again? Okay.
Did you understand? The question was, is if the spiritual relationship is strong enough, can that overcome other difficulties? Means, that there's not compatibility on other areas. Naturally, for minor things, yes. Like let's say both want to send the child to Gurukul, but now which Gurukul? Maybe one thinks this, that, then they can discuss and come to some agreeable standard. But it'll be very hard to overcome one wants to send to Gurukul and the other wants to send to Oxford. Because to overcome means the spiritual platform has to be stronger, that we don't identify with our own material desires. So to overcome these major things, there must be a detachment from our own mind, our own senses, our own, you know, values that come from our own conditioning. So that means giving up our own interests and desires for somebody else. So if we could do that so nicely, then there's no real reason to get married in the first place. You understand? Because if we can give up all our desires for Krishna and give up our conditioned nature, then marriage is not an important factor. We can just continue like that. That is the platform of the Naistik Brahmachari. The Upakurvana knows all this, but he sees that those attachments are still there strong. So he wants to destroy those so he can progress in his spiritual life. So therefore, one should marry someone who has the similar attachments so that together you can break those attachments. Just like with the spiritual master, one will choose a spiritual master who has a nature that we can relate to, so that because the instructions we'll get, we will understand them. So similarly, in this relationship, there must be a similarity in nature, because they have to work cooperatively together to come out of material attachment. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Another aspect, because just of this, that we can discuss, not today, maybe tomorrow, but that's connected to this. If there's not a similarity also in the consciousness, then when one conceives a child, since the child's mentality will be similar to the parents at the time of conception, then one parent may be satisfied, the other may not, or the combination may create something else. Just like you put yellow and green together, yellow and blue together, you get green. You know, it's not yellow, it's not blue. Right? So if both parents are yellow, you get yellow kid, and then everybody can relate to each other. But otherwise, father's blue, mother's yellow, and then kid's green. Then, you understand what I mean? This doesn't mean skin. We're just talking about when you combine colors. You understand? Because otherwise, some mixes create some amazing, what you wouldn't think. Like you mix, I forget what it is. You mix a kshatriya with... forget what one it is. Huh? No, not a Shudra. That's what you expect. Kshatriya with a Shudra then creates... Kshatriya with a Shudra creates a Shudrani. Like Vidura. But they still have very good qualities sometimes. But then a Kshatriya with someone else, I forget if it's Aniloma or Pratiloma, can create a Chandala. So you have... I think it's if a Brahmin and a Kshatriya, there's the wrong mix. You know, like Pratiloma works, but Aniloma doesn't work. Something like that is you have two, you know, high-grade personalities, but their kids are chandala. So it should be understood that one has to be very careful that mentalities are very similar. We're not talking physical, we're talking mental. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, physical attraction was not a very important feature, because the physical attraction disappears after a few days. Yeah. Otherwise, what is it? There was, I think, something. Some at one gathering, it was all like celebrities all came together in England at this one gathering, right? And you had, I think, Bernard Shaw was there. He was a very intelligent writer. And then there was this very famous, I think, model. You know, society lady, very beautiful. She also came. So then, you know, the lady mentioned to Bernard Shaw, said, if we got married, just think, we might have a child that would have my beauty and your intelligence. But then his comment was, but madam, what if it has your intelligence and my beauty? So one has to be careful. So another aspect of this is it's sometimes hard to make that decision, because just a little contact creates attachment. So this proves the point that it's not so important, the person, whoever you associate with, you'll become attached to them. That's why it's always recommended that somebody else works out all these details for you. Otherwise, because then if it's not right, then they can look for someone else, and you're not attached. But if you do it yourself, and the time it takes to work that out, one may become attached, one feels, well, anyway, let's give it a try, we should be able to, and we're kind of like, we know it, maybe not right, but we're still depending upon the good judgment of our sentiment. So that's why in the Vedic culture, it doesn't recommend this process. It's more dangerous, because there's more chance of making a mistake because of attachment. So that's why in the old cultures, someone would do this for you. Someone else would talk to the families, talk to the individuals, get to know them, find out that, and then make some arrangement.
What if society like ours doesn't have this spectrum of generations? So whose responsibility is to take care of
whose responsibility to make the matches in the situation of our society? It depends upon the place and the situation of the individuals. But it's best that it's always run through some authority, someone that you trust, someone you know. Because this is also, it's part of the Vatsalya Ras, is that you bring somebody up, and then you also are responsible to see that they get married. So that means, you know, mothers, fathers, the kings, the teachers, the gurus, they deal to some degree with this. Though traditionally, it's specifically the duty of the parents. Otherwise, it'll fall to some other authority. But there must be a culture, both of the authorities understand these technicalities, and the general mass of devotees understand. Because this, like how it's going on now, this is not the normal method of learning it. Normally one would learn this anyway from family members. They would have these values, and they would try to give these values to their dependents. But because it's not there, then we are having this seminar. So if everybody understands this, it'll automatically develop. You know? Like that. It's like if boys won't marry girls that aren't trained, or girls won't marry boys that aren't trained, then things have to develop. Or if the authorities don't want that their dependents, you know, marry without being trained, then these things will develop. So it has to come from all sides. You know, because this is not a purely managerial problem. This is a, you know, social or personal problem. It's not that those in management can't deal with it, but they have to understand the process. Does that make some sense? No, but this is the reality. The reality is until it's understood, it's never going to happen. If you're willing to marry anything that wears a sari, then it's not going to get anywhere. So we have to understand charity begins at home. Otherwise, it's always going to be someone else's fault. Otherwise, I hear things like the reason the grihastha ashram doesn't work is because of the authorities. But I don't see any authority sitting in your house telling, hey, cook this for lunch. Hey, you're supposed to say that. Or no one sitting next to your bed, you know, and saying, hey, are you remembering Krishna now? So it comes down to the individual, and the individual has to accept that responsibility. Until they do, there is no question of social development. Social development goes on in India not because of the authorities, but because the parents and the people in the families train themselves, train their children. Then it goes on. The reason there's a problem now is not because of the management, because all of our parents who come from the West did not train us. That is the reason. The fault is there. And the fault ultimately goes back to us because we took birth in those families. And we only took birth there because of our own desire. If we were of such high caliber and such good, pure training, we wouldn't have taken birth in those families. We would have taken birth in families that would have been similar to our nature. Because we don't like authority, because we're wild and untrained, we got the parents that didn't train us. So the buck stops with us. And until each individual accepts that, then we can go on emotionally, making issues, making committees, hoo-haing about, and nothing will happen. You know? Economic development happens for those who can do it. I give 100 rupees to a Vaishya today. I come back tomorrow, he's got 1,000. And I give 100 rupees to someone who's not a Vaishya. I come back tomorrow, he's got 50 rupees because he spent 50 on it for rice and dal. So the reason economic development is not going on because there's no Vaishyas, that's all. And there's no managers that know how to create a system for Vaishyas. So we have to understand it comes back to us. It's not someone else. My marriage is not going right. It's no one else's fault but myself. Like that, ultimately. Yes.
Another point is that we emphasize always on the chart and astrology. What part to play is the astrology and the karma and marriage are made in heaven?
Yes. Yeah, they're made in heaven, but they throw them out and they've come down here. That's the problem. If they stayed in heaven, then they... This is the minor point that's not looked at. The chart is there because it just, in one way, you can tell some certain aspects of the nature, certain compatibilities, just because the planets have influence, and depending upon that, it's important, especially it's important the less we're Krishna conscious, the more these things become important. The more we're Krishna conscious, then the less these things are important. You know? But then it's also important that we remain Krishna conscious. Otherwise, if we're Krishna conscious today, it may go for nicely for a while, and then at one point it falls apart. So... It has. I don't know. I don't remember. Do you know what are all the 10 compatibilities? What is it looking at? There's 10 things that you look for in the chart. That's main thing. Then you also have to look at the planets and all that. There's 10 things they look at. Basically the nature, you know, whether it's Deva, you know, Nara, Rakshasa, you know, all these different kinds of things. You know, there's many, many things. Just even physically you can tell. You know, the women have different categories. There's the... Hastini means the elephant, then the elephant, horse, other things like that. Then the man has 4. Certain ones can be combined, certain ones can't. All different kinds of things. So they just help. But ultimately it comes down to the cooperation of the individual and the Krishna consciousness of the individual. Even if astrologically everything's perfect, if one is not Krishna conscious or doesn't try, it's not going to be of any benefit. Or even if the marriage works perfectly, but they're not Krishna conscious, what's the use? So what? We've been through unlimited perfect marriages in previous lifetimes, but we're still attached. Therefore, what was the use of it? The idea is this life, we are married, but this is the last life we're in the material world, so that also means the last time we're married. You know, so just the idea is to finish up.
Because sometimes they only get influenced by this astrology and think, "Oh, my marriage is supposed to go this way or that way."
That's of course. That is of course. One has to balance, and also it must be understood that astrologers don't. They have their own opinions. Like I remember once they have their own ideas. Just like there may be something, oh, it's going to be very difficult for you in marriage life. You're going to be dependent upon others. You'll have just simple arrangements. You won't have much independence. You know, that's what shows in the chart. But then what that manifests as, that means you'll be in the temple, you're living in the temple, temple facilities, and, you know, taking the prasad in the temple, doing, you know, puja like that, you're happy. But for that materialistic astrologer, it looks very bad, you know? Or sometimes it goes the other way, you know? Sometimes they read it, you know? You know, you say, ah, there's a time here you're going to be staying in the royal facilities and eating royal food, right? So when that time comes, you find that you get put in jail, right? You're staying in the king's facilities and you're getting the king's food, but it wasn't exactly as you planned. That's why you have to see charts, but you also have to see the people, talk to the people, get to know the people, get to know the situation. Both have to be there. You got that? is that answer? Is that answer? Yeah. Go ahead.
Since how the Hashem doesn't the main policy said just like it is some incompatibilities or disagreements, you know, see each other. There are not so many. Could be like there's a if you don't have a match mate, or there could be a form printed out that, like an agreement, you sign an agreement before you enter it. That, you know, this is the standard of Krishna consciousness I'm prepared to accept, and this is what we want our kids to grow up like, and this is the kind of education we want, and so that they agree, they can. In the beginning, because you don't think like that, and you also may change a little bit in another 10 years down the line when your kids ready to go to school.
Yeah, of course. There's always the chance of. Could you hear? Huh? He was saying that maybe you could have a form, fill it up, this and that. So that could be one way of doing it. But at the same time, as sometimes you change your opinion as things go.
But then you got a contract. That's your contract.
Yeah, a contract is, it's good as long as the people are dutiful. Problem in the Kali Yuga, duty is not the primary concept of a marriage. Duty may be, you know, like you join a firm or something, you know, join a business or something like that. But in a marriage, somehow or another, it's not, at least now. Old school, yes, but old school is exceedingly rare now. I mean, I thought it was more there, but in a marriage, somehow or another, it's not, at least now. Old school, yes, but old school is exceedingly rare now. I mean, I thought it was more there, but in some countries, old school disappeared long time back. You know? So it's, one has to think about these things deeply, because you're talking about a long commitment. You know? Talking about a long commitment. You're not talking about a few years, you're talking about a long time. So one has to be very serious. That's why you should think beforehand. The process we follow now is that I'm the fired up brahmachari, and only when, you know, I can't hold on anymore, you know, and when it explodes, then that's the time to get married. One should know one's nature before, so that before that time, one already knows. So that gives you time to think, time to, in a sober way, make plans. Because you see in India that it's common, someone's going to get married, first they set things up. You know, they either finish their school, set up the business, get everything situated. Then they get married. But the Western thing is just, you know, love is the ultimate. They get married and then they figure out, well, how are they going to maintain themselves? How are they going to do anything like that? So in India, they do it the opposite.
that a compatible situation, or it can help the
question is that if a first class, you know, if one of the parties is first class and the other is second or third class, will that help? Is generally, it's not recommended, but if it is, rather than a first-class boy marrying a second- or third-class girl, you can have a first-class girl marry a second- or third-class boy. You understand? Generally, it works better that way. Like that. So it's one has to be very careful. One has to understand just because someone is, you know, physically very attractive doesn't necessarily indicate culture. There must be some piety to have physical, you know, attractiveness, education, position, all these things. But at the same time, his character might be weak. One has to be very careful. You know? In other words, out of sentiment shouldn't be done. So only in case the other party understands, see if it's One is first class, and another one trained. The other one is not, but they understand that, and they're willing to try to come to that first class platform. Then it can work. But if the third class person thinks they're first class, it can never work. Unless, as I said, unless it's that way. The girl is first class, and the boy is less. You understand? Because of the sensitivity of the wife, she can get things done. It'll just take longer. You know. In other words, Prabhupada didn't recommend that those that come from a background of training, especially, in other words, Indian boys marrying white girls just because they look better, is Maya. You understand? Yeah, of course, that's always there. But in the context of, you know, what goes on now, you know, like that, one has to be very careful. Because, and it's also, just as you mentioned, it's not just because they're Indian, they're first class. So the Western girls shouldn't think just because they're Indian, then they're cultured and trained and gentle and sensitive and this and that. Means whatever there is going on in the universe, in the 8,400,000 species of life, all those mentalities are going on in India. All other parts of the universe or other parts of this planet are portions of that. There's more emphasis on one or the other. So India has everything. Well, when you go to the West, they only have part of everything, though it may be exaggerated. So therefore, India has the best, you know, humans that are like demigods, and they have the worst. So therefore, just because they're from India doesn't necessarily mean they're great. So that should also be understood by the fired up girls from the West, sick of the Western, exploitive, chauvinistic boys, and they'll catch themselves a nice, wonderful, gentle, well-trained Indian boy, who may not be. Because it takes one to know one. To know what is actually a gentleman, you have to be one yourself. Because an Indian gentleman, other than an Indian gentleman, other than a gentleman, you can't tell that they're the gentleman. Because it's so subtle, like that. So, therefore, you know, arrangements and that are better than using the tricks of the trade. Like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even amongst the devotees, the Vaishnavas, they should still marry a person who is of similar nature. They themselves also should not just marry anyone. That nature should be checked, and they should marry according to the nature. I mean, someone with an interest in, you know, a brahminical nature should marry someone with a brahminical nature. Someone with a Vaishnava nature should marry someone with a Vaishnava nature. Like that. It doesn't matter where they're from. You know, but the nature must be the same. Otherwise, then you end up with, it's going to be a problem. You understand? Marriage may go on, but what kind of kid you get? The son will take on the qualities of the mother. The mother's third class, you have a third class son. Therefore we see Kardama Muni first tested Devahuti for 9 months. Only when he saw that this woman has character, then he agreed to conceive a child. Otherwise he doesn't want a third class child. And because he tested, and she was first class, they had Kapila as their son. You understand? So you can do that, but one has to understand that the restrictions and all the things in marriage, part of them are for the husband and wife, but most of them are for the reaction that will come with the kid. This is another discussion for another day. But it's... You understand? How the husband and wife behave affects the psychology of the child. So therefore, so many rules are there. Just like the rule, women are seen as mother and they're trained as mother. So if the mother acts as a mother, the child will become strong. The mother thinks, why I should act as a mother? Why I have to do these things? You know, let the husband take care. You know? Then that child will turn out strange. So the wife may be satisfied, the husband may not mind, but the child is going to be strange. So if the purpose of marriage is to raise Krishna conscious children, then the purpose has been lost from that angle. Unless this first class man and third class woman don't have any children, then it may work. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be very, very careful. These little subtleties, they go right through. Just like I have a big preparation. I only have to put this much, too much salt, and the whole preparation is ruined. I may think, oh, what's the big deal if I don't spend so much time with my kid or don't take care of him properly? You know? You won't see it today. You'll see it later. So these things have their long-term effect. So the Vedic culture already knows all this, and so people are trained to do. Those who can understand, understand. Those who don't, just follow the duties. Right? They don't know why. Just this is the way they were trained. They do it and they get success. And those who can understand, then they know why, and then they train others. That makes sense. So we'll end here, and then tomorrow we can go into either, what was the one before? Yeah, tomorrow we can go into we can start with, you know, dealings with children and things like that. And then, you know, take it from there. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. That. And then, you know, take it from there. Okay, thank you very much.